aren't we going to read something else? Hi, I'm Lisa. Grateful member of Al-Anon and Gotawana Home Group. This is my home group, and it's thank you, Kelly, for asking me to and my husband to come here today and to share. And brings back a lot of memories for us. It's kind of all we, you know, we reminisce because this is where, you know, where our where we started over 10 years ago, and you know, just really grateful. I'm really, really grateful today. This program has given me such a such an incredible life today that I didn't know I could have. Where do I start? Anyways, I'm just going to start from the beginning real quick and qualify, and then what do we have, like 20 minutes apiece or... 25, okay. Okay, well, I grew up in alcoholism with an older brother that first qualified me for this program, and he's a few years older than me, and at a very young age, I started covering up for him and sneaking him in and out of my room, and, you know, making sure that when he was drunk, my mom didn't know and he didn't get in trouble. And I started that at like the age of 10, 11 years old, and it just seemed quite normal to do that. And then as we got older, I started getting to that dating age, and I started liking his friends, and they all pretty qualified for this thing too, for this program. And at the age of 18, I married one of his friends and had a couple sons with that husband, and it was a very, very violent relationship. We were both A-type personalities, in-your-face type of personalities. And when he got home from the bar at 2 in the morning, I was right there. I wasn't afraid one bit. And to get in his face, and we were just had a very violent start in my life in that relationship. And it didn't last very long when I was... he had two kids from a previous marriage, and we had two sons together. So by the age of 23, I was a mother of four. And one night I got brave enough, and I said, I just can't do this anymore. And I packed the car. I had everything ready to go. When he came home and passed out, I left. And I thought that was what you do, you know, pack it up and move on. And I learned really quickly that that didn't fix a whole heck of a lot, but I really put my parents through a lot of turmoil in that time because they were extremely worried about me all the time of what was going on. And, you know, it felt good to have that my parents' attention, even though that was not real good attention, but that was kind of where I was at. My older brother always got all this attention as growing up because he was always in trouble, juvenile hall, all this stuff. And my parents poured every ounce of money they had and attention into this brother of mine. And me and my other brother were pretty decent kids and went to school and got grades. And you pretty much didn't even know we were there. And so when, you know, it was my turn... And I was, you know, started living life as an adult. My life started commanding some attention because now I brought some little children into my insanity. And, you know, I was really repeating history there because all my attention went to the alcoholic husband in my life, and I really didn't pay attention to those kids. And I have huge lapses of time and memory where I don't remember 2-year-old birthdays. I don't remember taking them to school at their kindergarten years. I don't remember all that time because I was so obsessed with him in my life and what was going on with him and trying to manipulate and control his drinking. And, you know, I found myself and really sketchy situations over and over and over again. And I thought the solution was, you know, just go. And that's what my parents said, you know, when you're ready to go, give us a call. And, you know, and the thing that when I knew that it wasn't going to work out was when I had my second son, and the night I was supposed to go to the hospital when I went into labor, he'd been on a runner for about 5 days, and he'd come home about 2 a.m, and my water broke, and I said, you know what, it's time to go. And he said, we got to stop and pick up some drugs on the way to the hospital because I can't stay awake through this deal. And he was pissed and said, can you wait till tomorrow? I got to get some sleep. And it just wasn't working out in the schedule. And it was, and you know, this was kind of the way I lived, and it was kind of acceptable. And I was scraping money together to try and go pick up on the way to the hospital so I could give birth to our child. And this is the way we lived all the time, trying to scrape the money together and not pay the rent, and you know, and so we went to the hospital that night and or early in the morning, and it turned into like this emergency C-section thing, and that was enough. He said, "I gotta go. I can't do this. I gotta go." I don't know what "go" means or exactly, but he disappeared. And so my mom was there, and my mom had that baby with me. And but the next 7 days, I was real sick. I had a C-section. Things didn't go real well. And I never saw him that whole 7 days. He never showed up to see me. I didn't have a ride home from the hospital. My parents had to drive me home to a house. The electricity was off. We didn't have food. Rent money got spent while I was in the hospital that we did have. And my parents dropped me off into that environment. And they just said, they were so nice about it, but they let me write my story. They just said, when you're done, you can give us a call. And there was something that triggered for me then. I'm almost done here. And a few months after, once I was feeling a little better and things like that, that's when I packed it in one night and left in the night. Because it was the kind of situation where he took the parts off the car and wouldn't let me leave. And, you know, I just didn't have a fight in me. I'm just going in the night. And I served him with papers the next morning for custody and the divorce thing. And my dad said, just don't look back. Don't look back. So I thought, okay, I won't look back. And my parents brought me in, my dad. I moved in with my dad. My parents were going through a divorce at the same time. Lived with my dad, brought my two kids home. And, you know, he dusted me off, paid, got all my bills paid, got me a new car, everything looking good. I lost a lot of weight. That's always a requirement when you go single again. Lost a lot of weight, you know, going to the gym every night and that kind of thing. And but on the way home from the gym, I'd stop at the bars and play pool, and because I needed to find me a new him. And that's just what I did. And I thought that's where you go to meet people. And I really didn't know any different. by then I was actually drinking age. I was in my early 20s, and I was drinking age. And I pretty much hit it pretty hard out there for a couple years. I wasn't real nice to guys. It was pretty much 3 dates and you're out. You know, I didn't let anyone get too close to me. And I just used men. And I pretty much said, well, they're good for a paycheck and a good time, and that's about it. And then I was working at a company, and I worked with this guy named Joel, who was later on my brother-in-law. And he I really liked him. I wanted to go out with him, but he said he was getting married, so that was out. And he said, you know, you would be perfect for my brother. You would be just perfect for my brother. Do you mind if I give him your phone number? And I said, no, that sounds great, you know. So he gave me his brother's phone number, and we started talking on the phone for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then we finally went on one date, and then that was it. That night we went out, and that very first night I told him, you know, I don't like anyone that drinks, and I don't want you to smoke, and these are my requirements, and by the way, I have 2 kids, and, you know, we're a package deal. And he said, well, I don't smoke, and I don't drink, and I love kids. And I go, well, perfect. You're hired. Anyways, we went out, and it was instant love there. And by the end of the night, he was drinking and smoking, and he said, well, just for tonight. And it's just because we went to a bar to play pool, and we were dancing, and I felt like having a few drinks, and, you know, everybody was having cigarettes, and he had the perfect story. I said, okay, that makes sense, because I had a few beers, and I had a few cigarettes, too, that night, you know, so it seemed logical. And, you know, he brought me home, and he was really trying to be a gentleman, and, you know, the ugly side of me came out and just said, hey, why don't you come on in? Then the next day, he was still there, and he went out to greet all my neighbors. See, I was living with my dad, and my dad wasn't home, and he, with no shirt on, is introducing himself to all the neighbors where I grew up in this neighborhood, and picking up the newspaper, and I was so embarrassed. But at the same time, I loved it, you know. And then that next day, he left because I got to go home. And I thought, oh, man, I blew it. I kind of like this guy. I blew it, you know. And he called a couple hours later, and we talked every day. And, you know, we're 22 years later right now. So definitely strong chemistry there. And we dated every weekend. He worked nights, I worked days, dated every night and every weekend and things, and I didn't really know there was any kind of problem at that time. I really only saw him on the weekends, and we went to bars and we danced and we drank and things like that, but, you know, isn't that what you do? And it was always a good time. He was a really good time. Took me a lot of places I never could afford to go. We went to Tahoe skiing, and we went on trips all the time. He loved my kids. We went to Mexico, fishing all the time. It was always a good time. And a couple years into that relationship, I got pregnant, and I told him, and we didn't live together at that time. I still lived at my dad's. He had his place, and I said, I'm pregnant. And he told me, well, I got to talk to you, because I got a little problem here. I got to go clean up. And I'm going, clean up what? You know, I really didn't know what that meant. And he told me, well, I got a little heroin problem. I didn't even know what that word was. I didn't even know what that was. I mean, so that began my career of trying to manage that. And I said, well, don't do the drugs. Why don't you just drink? You know, just have a few drinks. You don't need to do those drugs, you know. They don't seem like a good thing. And he goes, well, no, I really need to clean up. We're going to have a baby. I got to get my shit together. So he packed it in, took a leave of absence from work, went to Northern California, went into some rehab, and I didn't see him for months. And I would call him once in a while. Here I am pregnant now, and he disappears. And says, you really need to go to Al-Anon. The sponsor up here says, you got to go to Al-Anon. And I'm thinking, okay, I'll go to Al-Anon, whatever that is. Not sure why I'm going, or, you know, because I really didn't comprehend the problem. And I went to I went to a few meetings, and I actually got a sponsor. This was in 1991, and it was actually a gal from this group. That was my sponsor, Stephanie. And she was really working hard with me, trying to get me to come around. And he came back, and then the baby was born, and I wasn't going to have no part of that program thing. And so we had Cody, and I moved in with him. And, you know, he went to the meetings and did the stuff, but it just seemed to take a lot of time away from the family. And didn't really grasp. I didn't really have any concept of what I was dealing with. And on our son's 1 year birthday, he went out and got loaded. And he showed up to the birthday party loaded. And I was so pissed that whole day. I didn't even remember the birthday party. And it was in a park, and it was on for like 3 more years of the drugs and drinking and things. My life spiraled out of control because I began to try and control that. I tried to put him on a budget. Have you ever put a dope fiend on a budget? And that doesn't work. And I tried to at Friday, when his check would direct deposit on Friday night into the bank, I would go online and I would transfer all his money from his paycheck into another account, because I knew when he got off work at 2 in the morning or 11 o'clock at night, he would go to the bar, and then there wouldn't be any money in that account, and he wouldn't be able to drink. And then I could pay the bill, I could write all the checks, and then transfer the money back on Monday. And then this is a lot of work. To do this. This is a lot of work. This is called insanity, because I did it every week, and it didn't work, because he got loaded every week. He still came home loaded every week. On Monday, well, by Sunday night, he'd be back home, and he'd be sorry. I'm sorry, honey. Didn't mean it. There was someone having a party. You know, there was always a great story, and I bought it every time. Okay, come on home. Now get ready, you got to go to work tomorrow, go get some sleep, and, you know, I'd make it all better, you know, over and over again. And but the disease in our house was really picking up steam, and there just wasn't enough money to go around, and I never could figure out where he was getting all this money all the time, but I found out eventually, because it was coming off credit cards and stuff, and we had a $30,000 American Express bill or something come in, and I'm like, how are we supposed to pay this stuff? Because I paid all the bills, too, and no control problem there. I think I still do that. And he said, well, I think if we take a second out on the house, you know, you can fix up the house a little bit, and that will... then my drug addiction will be a tax write-off. And I wasn't on this house. He owned this place before me, but now I'm signing loan docs, and I'm on the deed of this place because I got good credit, right? So I'm signing these loan docs, and now I got another payment I can't make, and, you know, I think we got a screen door that year. With that, and you know, and it was like, you know, things just kept getting worse, and you know, I'm putting the real light touch on it, but it was insanity. I worried all of the time. I had a stomach ache all the time. I was in constant worry because he overdosed a lot. It was always code blue. I mean, everything was high drama. There was always stuff going on, and there was a time where he said, you know, I'm just really tired. I don't want to do this anymore. I want to go into a rehab program, and so he did, and that was like in 95, and you know, I went to the meetings, and I heard him share, and they said, you know, you need to go to Al-Anon again. Here I am hearing that Al-Anon thing again, and I went along with the DO, with the hospital and the family program. Then he got out, and I, you know, we went to a little bit of it, but then I thought, we need church. That's what we need. We need to get involved in a church. And there were some people we met in rehab that were going to this church, and so we put all this, I put all this energy in the church, became a Sunday school teacher, and he was giving testimonials about staying sober at church and all that. And AA and Al-Anon went out the window. I don't even know where that went. It disappeared very quickly when we got involved in that. And he was loaded again. And he had taken a year and did the thing in the front of the church and the whole thing. And I was so embarrassed. Now I got to go back to church and he's loaded. And oh my God, that's... eventually he got sober again, and I thought, we should get married, because you're sober. I think he was about 6 or 7 months sober at that time, and I was like, we need to get married, and we need to go to counseling at church and all this stuff, and that's why, you know, you keep getting drunk, because, you know, the family, you need to get married and all this kind of stuff, because we were living together. And we, I went and bought a wedding dress, brought it home, and he said, oh, no, I got to go. Scared the shit out of him. Had to, he called that off. So that, we're not doing that. And can't we just go back to the living together thing? And it was good, just like that. We don't need to do the wedding thing. And I was to the point where I just said, well, if you're not gonna get, we're not gonna get married, then I gotta go. So I packed me and the kids up, and I left within a week, and I went to New Mexico. I got a job transfer, and my company moved me, and I think I left him with a nice chest and a sleeping bag, and I left. And I took the kids with me and everything we owned, and I went to New Mexico, and I started a life there. And right away, I'm trying to date and move on with my life and get involved in things in my life there. And I, it wasn't too long, and he found me. He came and got me in New Mexico, and he said, we need to get married. We got married. And then I still lived in New Mexico, and he stayed here in California, but we were married. And then eventually he had an overdose here, and I quit my good job there, and I came back here to save him. And when we got here, he told me he wasn't using, told me he was sober. My son Brandon, my kids are getting older now, and my son Brandon said, you know, Dad's dancing in the garage and there's no music, and what are you going to do about it? And I didn't have any program in me, anything, but I was tired and I was done with the whole program, and I just calmly picked up a bag, a duffel bag, I packed it, I said, you can't live here and do this anymore. I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I can't do it. It's just drained the life out of me, and my kids were watching, and so he left, and a little while later, he came back home and said he was sober, and I let him back in and everything, and he did get sober, and he started changing, actually started doing everything, and I got crazier. I got the anger and the kind of rage that I had was incredible. He was sober, and I was taking baseball bats to his truck, and fighting all the time. As soon as he got home from a meeting, I'd throw the stack of bills down, and I go, you're sober, what about this? What are you going to do to fix this? We had so much wreckage. We had lost that house. We had filed bankruptcy. We owed the IRS hundreds of thousands of dollars. Things were so far upside down that there just didn't seem to be any hope whatsoever in the situation, and I couldn't get the past out of my head, and I replayed it all the time as soon as he got home from the meeting. And I called his sponsor at 2 in the morning, and he kept mentioning Al-Anon. That word kept coming up again. And finally, there was a lady that was coming to this meeting, and she was in our our group at the hospital, and I had her number, and I called her, and she came and got me on a Saturday morning and took me and my youngest son to this meeting on Saturday morning. And there was a lot of people in there with young kids and a lot of recovery, and I felt like I was at home, and I wanted this thing bad. I was so tired and so sick of the disease that I would have done anything to get better. And I jumped in with both feet. I didn't dilly-dally around with Al-Anon anymore. When I decide this is what we're going to do, I'm all in. And I moved my, I got a sponsor, and 4 weeks into the program, I moved next door to her and told my whole family we're moving. I found a house in Placentia and on Spawn Street, and we're going to move. And it's a four-bedroom house because we were living in a little tiny place in Costa Mesa. And we moved in like 4 days. Just packed it. We were good at moving. We moved a lot, so we were pretty good at that. And we moved in, and, you know, I just jumped in with both feet. I wanted this I wanted something, a better life. You know, I wanted... I wanted to be a good mom again. I wanted to be an unangry person, and I heard that in here. And I didn't know how to get there. I was just full of so much hate and anger and remorse, and I had become such a bitch that I didn't want to be that anymore. I became a very ugly person inside. And when I fell in here, I wanted this so bad, I was willing to do anything. Even though I complained about it, and I was appalled all the time, and smug, arrogant, self-righteous, that describes me as a newcomer, definitely. And but I wanted it, and I was willing. I came to the meetings with a vengeance, and I drug all my kids in here to the meetings and said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have recovery in this house. It's a deal breaker. We didn't like each other at all, but we had both sponsored direction not to do anything with our marriage, not make any decisions, put it up on a shelf, just do the program. And I said, you know what, I could do that. I put my marriage up on a shelf. I said, I'm not going to focus on it anymore. I just was going to meetings, doing a deal. And, you know, slowly our lives got better. My life got better. My relationships got better. I picked up some tools when I was here. I learned to detach. I learned to not try and focus on everything he's doing. It was none of my business. That was a new word for me. None of my business. Everything's my business. And, and then a few years into this program, my kids were starting to, they were teenagers, and my oldest son was going to Alateen, and he got kicked out of Alateen, and they told me he might have a problem, and I was appalled that my kid would be alcoholic, and I stayed in denial for about a year in that, and eventually his disease came out, and he was dealing dope out of the window at the Spawn House, and it was not real cool thing to do, and decided one day that we can't live like this anymore. This is a sober house. And I got strong enough to let him go. My husband and I were unified in that decision. And that was probably the hardest thing I've ever done as a mom, is letting my kid hit a bottom. But I really believed, and I still do today, that the program gave me the ability to get out of the way and not throw the pillow under him and allow him to hit a bottom. You know, he's here today. He's in that back row there. But he's over 6 years sober today. And I know that I had nothing to do with him getting sober other than just leaving him alone. And I'm trying to do that today in my life. I'm trying to give my kids the dignity to grow up and not get in all their business. I'm not always the best at it. I still screw up a lot on it. But I do have a little bit of a pause button when I feel myself going there, and I can, you know, sometimes I have to say, I might need to make a phone call first. Can you wait a minute? And go call my sponsor and run it by her. You know, I love this way of life today. I get to sponsor a lot of people today out in Corona, and I get to work with a lot of others. And that, I was shown that right from the get-go. That's the solution, is to work with others. And I get to do that a lot, open up my home a lot. We have a lot of get-togethers in our backyard. You know, we have a vast fellowship today. And I didn't have any friends when I got here. I didn't have anyone that wanted to, like, hang out with me or go to dinner or, you know, just hang out and have coffee and chit-chat. That, those things didn't happen in my life, and I'm very grateful for that today. And I've probably talked long enough. Didn't mean to go that long. That went quick. And anyways, thanks for letting me share, and thanks for your support from my home group. I love you guys.
Now we'll hear from Brent. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Brent. And I haven't had a drink or shot dope since April 8th, 1998. And I'm grateful for that today. My home group is the Wednesday night Corona Book Study Men's Group. And a lot of those guys are here tonight to support us, and I thank you for that. And when Lisa was telling her story, I was sitting there going, God, that is so sad. And then I'm thinking, Jesus. I mean, oh, my God, that's my life. And it's just, yeah. I was like, geez, Christ. Yes. Credit cards. Mobile, Chevron, Shell. I bought a lot of tanks of gas for $50 and got 40 for it. That's how I got loaded. And she wondered, how did he get loaded? There's no money. I always had money. Always found a way. Before I get started, I want to thank the Al-Anons of this group for supporting my wife and my family. And I want to support the guys in this group for helping me get sober and stay sober. I just throwing that out there because without the Al-Anons, I'm not sure if I would be married today. And without the guys, I know I wouldn't be sober. So I thank you for all the help and the support from this from you guys. So, and with that, I'll get started. I'm not going to go all the way back to the womb or anything. I'm just going to start off. I grew up in Santa Ana and I went to John Muir Elementary. It was right there at 4th and Grand. It's right there in the barrio. And immediately, you know, growing up, I felt different from my fellows. I didn't speak Spanish, you know. And I started growing up around there. And I was, you know, the guys that I ran around with were running around the streets. And, you know, we were starting to get into some trouble, so my family said, you know, we got to get out of here. And they moved the whole family to Tustin. And so I went from being like five white guys in the whole high school to only five Mexicans in the whole high school. It was a complete flip-flop. And it's not that it's that, it's just that my whole life took an upside turn. And but I'll tell you right now, I'm here because I'm an alcoholic, and there was no alcoholism in my immediate family. You know, my grandfather was an alcoholic, and my aunt was a big drunk, and some of my cousins were pretty far out there, but there was, in my immediate family, there was no alcoholism. So when I started, you know, drinking was social. My parents entertained all the time. But I remember the first time I took first drink, and I was in junior high, and when I took that first drink, I loved it, you know, and I didn't know that my life would take the turns that it took, because when I think back on drinking early, it was good. You know, I didn't have bad thoughts about drinking. I only remember the good things. And that's why I ran for so many years. I just ran and ran it to the ground because I always thought, you know, I remember the first time that I got drunk with my friends and I was running around with some older guys and I'm in the back seat of a 65 Mustang flying up the hills, Bass and Cherry. And the speakers, I'm in the back seat, we're smoking a joint, I'm having a beer. Open container was completely acceptable back then. And I'm laying back in the back bench of that 65 Mustang, and Boston was on, and that song, More Than a Feeling, was wine, and I was just, yes! Freaking on! And the girls, and it was just good. You know, it was just good. And as I look back, I got drunk every time I drank, and I went for that buzz, that feeling. You know, people talk about, like Lisa used to say, you know, when I first met her, we'd get some, like, you know, we'd get some Coke or something, and she would get, like, a little bit, and I'd get a bunch, and she would just do little bits. I go, what are you doing? And she goes, I'm starting to feel out of control here. I'm not just going to do a little bit. And, you know, sometime in the night, I'm rifling for her purse, stealing it, you know. And but in high school, you know, I was a good student. I didn't have, you know, I didn't come from this, you know, my parents were married. It was a very good family. I had no reason to be a drunk. I mean, I thought drunks were guys that push shopping carts, you know. My grandfather was a drunk. He worked for the Canadian Railroad for 45 years. And he was a binge drinker, and he would work his ass off on that railroad for 6 months straight, and then one day he'd go and get a six-pack of beer, and within a week he's bedridden with a 24-pack underneath, reaching and grabbing warm ones. That was a drunk. I'm not going to be like that. And, you know, I had dreams. You know, I wanted to do something with my life, and so I went to college, and I'm in college, and I'm hitting the books, but I don't know what I want to be. And but I surfed, and I had started surfing when I was 13, so at about the age of 20, I said, you know, Christmas vacation, I'm going to just take 2 weeks off and go to Hawaii. So I saved up some money and took a flight over there. I bought a round-trip ticket, went to Hawaii, went to the North Shore, hooked up with these South Africans, and a couple Australians, and we started surfing, and they started introducing me to some stuff that I never knew nothing about, and they introduced me to some China White, and needless to say, I never came back for 3 years. Parents, what the hell, where are you coming back to school? I got things going on here, I got some different things, I got a job. And I moved to Hawaii, and I was backpacking Hawaii, and I hooked up with some other people, and they were, you know, needless to say, you know, my life had changed. I got a job at this restaurant called the Pineapple Hill Restaurant in Maui, and I was bussing tables, and the guy goes, hey, I got something in the bus station for you. And I go, what's that? And he goes, I got a little line of Coke for you. And I go, well, I've never done that. And he goes, just do a little bit of that, and you'll be on. And, you know, I'm like 21. I go in the bus station. I do one little line of that stuff, and my life was changed forever from that day forward. Whoa! This stuff, hey, I can work twice as hard. I could do this. You know, I didn't get into it full on right at the beginning, but, you know, when Hawaii, the drinking age was 18. So when I went to Hawaii, you know, all these people were drinking, were in bars, life was on. And after about 3 years of there, I started running out of gas. And I said, you know, I got to do something. I got to get off this rock and get my life in order. And so I got a pound of Maui Maui and strapped it to my leg and flew back and started dealing and out of my parents' house. And I thought, you know, we'll just jumpstart this little career with some financial gain. And I didn't work for like 3 years, and I was running with the crowd, and you know, the disease was taking hold. It was taking hold of me. And I wasn't very good at relationships. I wasn't good at relationships at all. I didn't have any relationships. My brother was working with my sister, and my brother felt sorry for me. And he says, you know, you got to freaking get out of the house or do something. And he goes, I got a girl that you can meet. And I go, oh, yeah, I'll meet her. She'll meet me. And so I, what the hell, you know, I had to borrow a car to take her out because the car I had was such a beater. And it was a Volkswagen that it was just terrible. In fact, I was at a bar in Chapman, and it was raining, and I was looked to the left and I looked to the right as I was pulling out, and I gassed it, and next thing you know, I'm airborne in this thing, and I went over the center divider. I thought there was a turning thing, and I launched it and landed, and I blew out three tires, and it was raining, and I just clink, clink, clink all the way down Chapman, and the cops pulled me over and said, "Hey, what's going on here?" And I said, I looked at him, I said, "You know, I got some tire problems, and it's just raining so hard that I just figure I just live just up the street." And the guy let me go. And he says, "You know, it is pouring out here." And he got back in his car, and I drove. So I couldn't take her out in that car. So I went and borrowed a car, and I was trying to put my best foot forward. So I told her I didn't drink or smoke. And if I told her I had a 10-year heroin addiction, it would have been off. So we go out, you know, we had a great date, and I'm just being a great guy, and somewhere along the date, I was just jonesing for a cigarette. I had to have one, so I lit one up, and I was pretty thirsty, so I ordered a beer to go with it, and I don't know, man, it's, I don't know what to say. I just, you know, I had to come clean at some point in that relationship, because, you know, I was drooling. I don't know. I just see, you can only hide it for so long. Ashes this long. You're just like, I don't. But you know I'm an alcoholic because she's living with her dad. She's got two kids, and she's an attraction to me. I just can't wait to, you know. The thing is we were meant for each other. We were. But I'll tell you what, it wasn't. It was all fun and games at first, but it had, at some point, life set in, and, you know, I had a house that was in the rears, and, you know, when I, you know, we were trying to keep, hang on to our stuff, and I had a job that was really disgruntled with me, and I took some serious shots at sobriety, but I didn't quite get it, and I just wasn't ready. I'd been sent to AA by the courts because I accumulated like 3 DUIs and a couple of, I successfully completed 2 18-month school 10 programs. I got certificates to prove it. I successfully completed a couple of diversion programs, drug diversion. I got certificates to prove it. I got all kinds of freaking certificates, but I couldn't keep a drink out of my face. You know, I just couldn't do it. You know, I'm just trying to play the game. I'm trying to hang on to the wife, hang on to the house, hang on to the job, hang on to whatever I can hang on to. And none of that stuff mattered to me unless I got loaded first. That was the priority. And eventually that job of 18 years blew me out. They just said, "You know what? We're done with you. I was driving a forklift, and on the job, and I handed a guy a piece of metal, and it was stuck together. So I took my glove off, split the metal apart, and handed it to him with my hand sliced. And they said, "Oh, you got to go to you got to go to the emergency clinic." I said, "Oh, really? Because I know they check your urine when you go there. They do a urine test." And I was like, "Damn, I'm gonna fail this thing, and I'm hanging on this job." And so I didn't go to the clinic. What I did is I went home, and Lisa was managing a pharmacy company, and I got all the professional bandages and bandaged it all up professionally. I go, "Lisa, man, I'm going to lose my freaking job." And she goes, "Oh, well, you can't do that." So she bandages me up, you know. We're just like total fear of losing this job and whatever. And I go back to the job, and the guy goes, "So what did they say?" And I said, "Oh, you know, it's going to be okay. I'm not going to lose my hand. You know, it's good." And he goes, "Brent, I called. You never showed up." And I said, "Really?" And you know, just trying to do the hustle, the you know, they said, you know what, we're going to have to suspend you. And, you know, my life just crumbled. You know, I mean, it's just a job, but it meant, you know, shit. You know, how am I, I'm going to lose everything, you know. And that was probably one of the best things that got me going in the right direction, because it jogged me just enough to want to go get the help that they said. They said, you know, you gotta do something. So I went through the motions. You know, I did what they said, and something clicked along the way. You know, it started me on the path. But I stayed sober for a year. But I didn't do what we're supposed to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't work with others. I didn't get a sponsor. I stayed on the outside, didn't work any steps. And at about 13 months, I started taking my own will back, like seriously. And I was loaded within 30 days. And Lisa was doing two jobs. The kids hated me. Unloaded. And she came home, and she did. She got a little bag and just threw some clothes and toothbrush and some whatever in there. And you know what? I could have fought it, but I didn't, because I had no more fight left. I was done. And I went to a hotel. It was in Costa Mesa, the Alibaba Hotel. And there was about three, but I chose the Alibaba. And what a freaking low life. But I went in there, and I started, I had a moment of clarity in the Alibaba. I was in there, and I sat there, and I said, you know, I started reflecting on my life and saying, you know, I just said a simple question. It wasn't supposed to be like this. You know, my life, what the fuck happened to my life? It was not supposed to be like this. And I got on my knees and I asked God to help me. And I stayed in that room for like 3 days, and maybe longer. And I didn't get loaded. And I was dope sick. And I realized it was up for me. I had to do something. And I went to, God forbid, I went to AA. And I ended up going to AA because that's the only place. The church, whatever, doesn't work. I went to AA. The answer, the seed was planted from you guys. And I went to AA, and then I went back to her. And I told her, I go, you know what? I'm clean. I'm really clean. And I want to come back into the house. And if I ever get loaded again, I will leave. And I have not gotten loaded since. And that was over 11 years ago. But a lot of stuff has to happen between now and then to get where I am today. A lot of work had to happen. And my sponsor told me that I don't get to run, because I didn't want that family anymore. I got sober. It was like returning to the scene of the crime. Every time I walked into that house and seen those kids, how fucking whacked out they were, I felt this shame, this guilt that I was responsible for it. And I was. But it was just so much for me to bear. I could not, it's hard to stay sober in the house where the disease and everything started. It's hard, but I'm here to tell you it can be done. But you can't do it alone. And my sponsor told me that I don't get to run, and I had to keep going there. And, you know, and Lisa used to browbeat me all the time about the bills. I can't do anything about the bills. I can barely keep a drink out of my face right now. I don't care about the bills. But it was important to her. And I understand. She's got the kids and everything. She used to go out there and freaking harass that guy, my sponsor. You know, what the hell is going on here? And shit, my sponsor goes, who is this woman? And don't say it. Once you do something that you have never done before, and I go, what's that? And he goes, why don't you just be nice to her? I go, what a concept. Okay. All right. We'll try being nice to each other. We did not, it's an understatement, we did not like each other when I got sober. But we said, well, you know, we'll ride this to the rims for the kids for right now. She used to call him up and goes, look at, you know, like at 11 o'clock, he's a contractor. He gets up at oh dark 30. He's in bed by 8. She'd call him at 11. He's in bed. And she's going, I read that big book. When's the spiritual awakening going to happen? You know, and he was so patient with her. And he says, you know, just be patient. Just, you know, he was loving. But he did give her a number to some girls, you know, to some women to call in the program of Al-Anon. And that's when she started going here. And, yeah, she did. I was probably a year sober. And she goes, you know, I wasn't even a year. I was about a year sober. And she says, you know, we need to move. Oh, okay. Whatever, babe, I'm with you all the way. And she did. She moved us into the Spawn house. Nice house. I thought, you know a lot of girls on this street. There's a house over there. There's about 6 girls in there that you know. Where do you know them from? And there's a house right next door on the left with about 6 more. There's like 12 Al-Anons crossing my thing, too. Woo-hoo. And I was like, oh, my God. I go, they better not walk on my lawn. And they walk on my lawn, I'm going to fire up the sprinklers. I don't want these guys. I don't want them in my yard. I don't want them coming over. I don't want them even around. And but, you know, you girls were doing something with my wife that I couldn't do. You got her off my neck. And you did. And I was going to just mixed meetings and stuff, and I was having, you know, I said, you know what, I really want to get sober. I want to stay sober. And I felt myself slipping. And I jumped into this group and ran with you guys for about a year. And I ran around with John and Rob, and we did AA. And you guys showed me something that I didn't know anything about, and that's how to work with new guys. I knew nothing about nothing. And I know a little bit more than nothing today, but at that time I knew nothing about nothing. And you guys showed me unity, just drive for to stay sober, and how much work it has to be. You know, the priority of it. You know, because if I don't have that, I have a tendency to backslide and rest on my laurels sometimes, and it gets me into trouble. But we how many meetings you do a week? I don't know, like 14. And they go, wow. I go, yeah, I'm sober. And I felt good, and it's good, and I have nothing but good memories of doing that. I didn't know how to talk to new guys. We used to run over to Cider House and do panels and detox units and talk to people, and it's good. And we moved to Corona 6 years ago. And I was trying to do AA in Orange County, and then I realized that I go, you know what, I live in Corona, this is where I make my home, this is where I'm going to try to do my AA. And I hooked up with a couple of guys that had less time than I did, but that were just as hungry for sobriety. And we hooked up, and we started doing AA and sharing what was taught to us. And out of that, a little fellowship grew. And the wives got into Al-Anon, and the kids got into recovery. And the neat thing about that is, you know, Lisa and I had walked through a lot of stuff, like with Brandon, our son, he's got 6 years back there. You know, I remember the day, we got to have a family meeting here. You can't sell pot and ecstasy out of my windows. Not now. This is a house of recovery. But I was willing to, even though my sobriety was at stake, I was untreated in my own Alamo. I was like, you know, maybe we could change him. And she goes, no, he's got to freaking go. And I go, man, she's tough. And, that's your blood. And she goes, no, man, if, you know, put it this way, if I go down, we're all going down. You know, the ship is freaking it's going to have holes in it. And we couldn't do that without strong sponsorship to walk us through that. And there's other situations in our recovery that we've walked through. Well, guess what? The people we're running with are going through the same thing. The same thing. And they're looking and going, what did you guys do? And I go, well, this is what I was shown, and this is what we did. And, you know, if you get loaded, then you're freaking gone. And, you know, it's like, you know, I had to be taught all this stuff. I don't know what's right and wrong, you know. I have to be shown. And but the main thing is I have to show up to do it. If I don't show up, there's no hope. And I'm grateful for the fact that I'm still sober. I'm grateful for the fact that I still want to do AA, you know. And there's a lot of times that my wife sets the pace of recovery in our house sometimes, you know. Freaking, I look in there, I go, oh, you're having your book study over here? How many girls? Oh, I'm freaking out of here. And I'll get my guys and we'll go to the shop and we'll have our book study. And it's good. You know, I mean, I was sharing with, I think it was Ruben or someone before the meeting, that we got second generation alcoholics in our family now coming up. I got Brandon, John has got Sarah. I mean, I don't want to start breaking anonymity, but I just did. Anyways, what I'm saying is all these people that I run with, their kids are coming up and they're sober and they're young. And then, they have experience, and man, these kids are on fire right now, these young kids. It's awesome to see. And when our families get together, nobody's packing knives or guns, you know. We're having good get-togethers, and we're not the bedrock of mental health, you know, but we're real, you know. We're real, and there's no freaking, you know, what the heck? Hey, how's it going? What's that elephant doing in the living room? You know, there's no big white elephant going on in our lives. You know, we're in recovery, you know, and we support each other. And when I look out here, I got probably 10, Lisa and I have 10 friends at minimum that are here tonight. And on any given night, if they were to go and do something in AA, they would have at least that alongside them, just like you guys do. You know, you can't do this thing alone. And, you know, I'm trying to wrap it up, and I'm over time. But I'll tell you right now, life is good, and I owe my life to AA, and I owe my marriage to Al-Anon. Thanks for letting me share.